take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Should we just search romantic comedies on Netflix and then see what we find?
Welcome to the New York Times Podcast, your contemporaneous notes of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Selfish, I know, but I don't ever want to see you with him. Selfish, I know, I told you, but I know you never listen.
Okay, now that you stopped laughing, that was Woman by Harry Styles.
Supertramp?
What is Supertramp? Harry Styles, as you may know, is a former member of One Direction. He's the one with long hair, and he's the one who can't dance. One of the ones who can't dance. And Harry Styles is one of the two famous ones, basically. And he has just released his solo debut album, which is self-titled. And it comes at an interesting moment where there is a little bit of pop rock that is sort of percolating. It is not a thing that happens all that often. But a few weeks ago, another famous pop rock lover put out a record. That's our man John Mayer. And so
the mid-tempo boys.
Yeah. So together. Why not gather the squad to talk about the plight of pop rock and contemporary mainstream aesthetics? To my left, pop music editor of the New York Times, it's Karen Gans.
Hey, John, I just got to fact check your intro.
Yes, please.
You said formerly of One Direction. I believe they're on hiatus.
Damn.
So that's damn. One thing. Number two,
my gosh.
I believe all of them don't dance.
Okay, this is tough.
All right.
I believe Zayn can. I believe he chooses not to. There's a difference between can't and won't.
There's a lot Zayn won't do.
Yeah, it's a true story. And that incisive critique coming from my right, New York Times pop music reporter Joe Cascarelli.
It's me.
This is, I feel like, I'm sorry that John Perales is not here, but I do feel like I'm happy that the in-house brain trust is here.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there are a lot of people who either care about the Harry Styles record, but kind of for the wrong reason. And a lot of people who maybe don't care about the John Mayer record, maybe for the right reasons. I'm glad that I'm surrounded by people who care about both for the right reasons. We're going to start with Harry. We're going to get back to John. So, Karen, why don't you tell the people what you texted me earlier today? Because I really feel like it just kind of encapsulates the whole thing.
Well, early in my listening, when I was getting deep into the Harry record, I texted John like, Jesus Christ, Harry Styles made a Beck record.
Facts.
The first five songs are literally, there's an Odelay song, there's a Sea Change song. You can pretty much go through the whole thing.
Do you think Harry Styles has ever heard a Beck record?
I don't think so.
No. But no, I think the people who helped him make the record have heard a Beck record.
Definitely heard a Beck record. Okay, so this is a thing that I think has come up for all of us in listening to the Harry record, which is every song sounds like something else, whether it's a specific prior song or an era of music or a particular vocal style. You know, Harry is coming out of a situation where, you know, One Direction was really not about signature voices. You can look at other male boy bands and also female girl bands and sort of identify, okay, well, that's a Sporty Spice moment. Okay, that's a JC Chassé moment. You can sort of pull some of the voices out. Harry was maybe half identifiable in One Direction. He was more visually identifiable than orally identifiable.
As all of them are, I think.
Yes.
Or two of them are.
Yes, true.
Niall has a song out this week, too.
Who?
Sorry.
Never heard of him.
R.I.P. Nile.
Yeah, never heard of you, bruh. So on the one hand, Harry had this sort of blank slate to work with, right? Like, he could have been like, I can do anything. I can make a Darkness record. You know, who knows? Like, maybe that's what he's always wanted to do.
The Darkness? He probably loved the Darkness as a toddler.
Yeah, like a 7-year-old. He's like, oh, this is well good. Unlike, say, when Justin Timberlake leaves NSYNC, and it's very clear he's going to make contemporary pop R&B, and it was unclear it would be as progressive as it was, but at least the lane was clear. With Harry, really could have been anything. Like, he could have done a country record. So let's talk about what he landed on and why.
I mean, he landed on rock.
Could you define rock for our audience?
I think every song is guitar-based. Maybe Sign of the Times is more piano-based, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of acoustic guitar on this album, a lot of sort of 60s, 70s singer-songwriter stuff. You know, there's pretty direct nods to the Beatles, the Stones. When I did a brief and relatively unsuccessful phone interview with Harry Styles...
just to be clear, the unsuccessful part was Harry Styles.
Yes. You know, I tried.
just to be fair.
But, you know, he said, you know, I think he said it's stuff I grew up on, playing Floyd, Fleetwood Mac, you know, the touchstones basically of late 20th century rock music. And I think, side note here that I didn't get into my piece is for the real heads, I think it's not a coincidence that Harry's manager is Irving Azoff's son.
Oh, interesting.
So,
yeah.
You know, a great rock manager. Mm-hmm. Of Fleetwood Mac and, you know, the Eagles and stuff like that. Like, I think that this is all, it's in the blood, both for Harry and for his team.
Do you think Harry's ever like, call your dad?
I'm sure Irving's getting a little piece of this Harry, somewhere. This Harry pie. Yeah.
But you also rightfully pointed out in the intro to your, what I would argue was a successful Q&A.
Thanks,
diverging
editor.
Opinions, yes. And a lot of that is also the sound as it was filtered through, like, Oasis.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, there's some, I hear a little bit of Blur in there, a little bit of Oasis. This is a kid who grew up, you know, in the 2000s in England, and it makes sense if you look at it from that direction.
Yeah, and I feel like what I was also hearing was sort of, and I mentioned this in my review, like this Cafe Wa, like downtown New York, like kind of like second wave of singer-songwriter folk. And then there's like those two songs like just after the middle of the album where I'm like, is that sort of like early Aerosmith? Is that sort of like bad?
Or like for, late Rolling Stones?
Yeah, like it's just sort of like rowdy, but it's so, the rowdiness is so quiet. So anyway, all of those things are kind of at play, which is to say nothing is really at play. I guess the question that I kept thinking is, what is at stake on this record? Because if you want to compare it to Zane, which is not necessarily a fair comparison, but you want to compare it to Zane, at least you knew what the stakes of the Zane record were. Their individual stakes, but he also is playing in contemporary pop. It's either unsuccessful or successful up against Usher, Chris Brown,
Drake,
whatever's on the radio. Harry, I feel like he's just like, I'm just going to say no.
So I think what Zayn did was he set himself up in opposition to One Direction, which is in tune with the way the radio sounds. What Harry did is set himself up sort of as a progression of what One Direction was making. Like, there were, you know, rock-influenced songs on every One Direction album, and increasingly so later in their career, but in opposition to what was on the radio. And I think in some ways, maybe he thinks he's a big enough star that he can turn the tide. And the tide is also, you know, it maybe it's slowly starting to turn itself or swinging a little bit like a pendulum.
Right. Are you trying to say rock is back?
Saying that, but I am saying that Malibu by Miley Cyrus has guitars in it.
Let us not speak of that song. Actually, let us not speak of that video. Actually, let's not speak of that photo shoot.
Shout out to Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Photographer.
That's right. Exact comma. Photographer. Check his LinkedIn. But I don't think that that's what Harry Styles I don't think he thinks he's
changing the sound
of it. If anything, it feels almost like a confession or like an admission of like, I don't know if I could do anything but this. That said, thought experiment. Imagine instead of Jeff Basker working on a bunch of this record, imagine Ed Sheeran worked on a bunch of this record.
Well, it just would have sounded more contemporary.
And better?
Well, I think what he was trying to do was, like, this was like an authenticity grab. You know, like, I'm not just a shiny object. I'm not just a tabloid headline. I'm an artist. I don't think he had any, like, designs on shifting, like, the narrative or the pop conversation or what's happening on the radio. I think he just, to me, I think this was just a throwaway. His fans will buy it regardless of what it sounds like. He doesn't need the radio. They'll stream it. Is he looking for a Grammy? Maybe.
Okay, I think it's probably worth saying up front, I mostly like this record. Yeah. I don't love this record, but I mostly like this record. To me, it's interesting. It's very clearly polished and sandpapered at the corners without having an overt digital feel. I think in one of the interviews, maybe it was Rolling Stone or somewhere else, they talk about how he insisted on having, like, all the equipment be, like, cutting-edge equipment. Like, he didn't, like, go in with, like, vintage everything from recording to mixing to everything.
This wasn't, like, on tape.
Yes, right. It was made in an old style with new equipment.
And it sounds like that.
Yeah, it does sound like that. I feel like it's mostly successful, even if I still feel like I don't know a whole lot about Harry Styles after the fact.
My issues with it, in addition to the sort of, it feels like a adult coloring book for rock music, mm-hmm. as you sort of
Damn.
Touched on, like,
that's a pretty slick burn.
burnt umbered.
But yeah. Also, lyrically, it's a pile up of rock cliches, right?
Sure.
In terms
yes.
of a woman who's a devil in the sheets, you mm-hmm. know, there's like the sound effect of somebody
true?
Snorting cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm just talking about one song here, but you know, it's like there's like the groupie tale, there's yeah. the, you know, yeah. the one night stand, there's
the one that's sort of like, our love is kind of like a drug den, or a drug den is kind of like our love.
The one,
or,
the yeah, the lonely hotel rooms, mm-hmm. you know, and again, like, it's not. You don't really learn a whole lot about Harry Styles, which is also how I felt speaking to him.
Let's listen to a little bit of the Love Den, Drug Den. That's Meet Me in the Hallway.
Opening track.
Yes.
Matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece, and in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
An interesting thing that I do think is sprinkled throughout this record is, as with any sort of first post-boy band record, there are these signifiers, like, I'm grown now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, like, sometimes it's sex, and sometimes it's drugs, and sometimes it's, like, emotional torment. And in his case, there are, like, a couple of drug songs and a couple of, like, there's the Joe, you famously asked him about masturbation.
And, you know, From the Dining Table, that's the closing song on the album. Yes. I think those lyrics are good. I think mm-hmm. that first verse is good. I think mm-hmm. it's it feels like the truest song on the album to me. And I feel like it does give a little window into the maybe the loneliness of being Harry Styles. I think even my phone misses your call. That's a good line.
That was the second thing I texted John Caramonica about this album. You're really just all my greatest hits. Yeah.
And I agree with John, your review, which I think just will have posted by the time this is out. Mm-hmm. You said that the acoustic songs are some of the best ones.
Yeah.
So I think in addition to From the Dining Table, Sweet Creature
is the one for me.
That seems like maybe a familial relationship he's talking mm-hmm. about or a broken love interest. It could go either way. But that also has a nice like minimal vibe. And I think it's much better than the sort of like crotch rock that comes in the, as you said, like the beginning
of side
two. I think
the crotch rock is in the middle. Yeah. I think the first couple of songs are actually fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then the crotch rock, it's sort of like it's aiming for the Rolling Stones, but it's landing somewhere closer to Van Halen. Just a little bit.
Who are great.
I love Van Halen.
Record.
Again, none of us dislike the record. This is not a negative
you
podcast.
You are wearing a Rolling Stones t-shirt.
I'm wearing a Rolling Stones t-shirt because I dressed for the podcast, John.
I'm wearing a Miley Cyrus t-shirt. So, you know, like,
we both dressed.
We're all sort of preaching our gangs today.
But no, I really think that, like, the album, those two songs sort of in the middle.
Are you thinking Only Angel and Kiwi, perhaps?
I am. Only Angel and Kiwi. How did you know?
How could you not know?
Well, that's where it feels like an imitation.
Yes.
And that's where the problem began.
Let's actually listen to, I almost don't want to subject them to Kiwi. Like, should we just listen to like the last? Do you want to do Kiwi?
Yeah, let's do it.
Kiwi is the most of this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you want a tolerable version of this, the back end of Only Angel is kind of okay. But here's Kiwi. She sits beside me like a silhouette. Hard candy dripping on me till my feet are wet. And now she's all over me. It's like I paid for it. It's like I paid for it. I'm gonna pay for this. So that was Kiwi. That was pretty bad. that was an unsuccessful Harry Styles song. Okay, so let's think about Harry Styles vis-a-vis his past self. What did we know about Harry before, 12 months ago?
Beautiful man.
True. True.
Dated Taylor Swift.
True. Also true. Great
cheekbones.
It's
like a speed round.
That's about it.
Yeah, but not that much.
No.
An interesting thing about boy bands is one of the sort of sales pitches of boy bands is you have different members catering to different tastes, right?
Team Zane.
Always. Here till the end of time.
Not musically, but, you know.
Well, you know, if we're going to pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, Team Zane. But a thing about One Direction that I always thought was strange is I felt like there weren't necessarily distinct value propositions for at least three of the guys. And Harry sometimes, I think, slipped in and out of that. Like, there were times when he could have been Liam. All the Liam stans are going to come in.
except he was just known as the charismatic one, which
yes.
is hilarious, actually, now that we're thinking that we actually don't know much about him at all.
He's just the hottest. I mean, like, I don't know.
This is a debatable point.
I agree. It's debatable.
Karen thinks he looks strange.
I think he's over. I'm sorry.
We've already fought about this off mic. But I just think, like, if you're casting them and this is a boy band in a comedy, Harry Styles, you just write the hot one.
Yeah, he has a striking pop star quality.
Yeah. I think it's relevant to the his image.
Yes. So do you think there's a version of a successful One Direction.
Contemporaneous with One Direction.
Yes, exactly. Like sort of One Direction sidebar solo career. Is there a version of it that is more emotionally revealing? Or is that something that's not kind of in his realm of possibility?
Well, think about Fifth Harmony, which is actually like the
I do often.
Exact corollary, right? Another group constructed.
Lauren Horegi Hive.
Yes. Like made from scratch by Simon Cowell and the X Factor. And you don't really know too much about them, do you? Or, I mean, perhaps you do.
Yeah. You're in the wrong pocket.
Right,
the royal you knows nothing about Fifth Harmony.
They're not in the mode of – I feel like both of these bands were not constructed in the mode of the Spice Girls where there is like
is
one
correct.
For each
yeah,
of you.
I agree. Yes. Like you say, they're formed on the X Factor. I think Simon Cowell is like a known savage. And I think like rather than let these like handsome young men out of his reach, was just like, I'm going to literally like make a chicken McNugget out of them and just like jam them together.
The chicken McNuggets.
It's one
nugs for Simon.
Yes, just a nug of just putting it all together. And then there's your band.
But to answer your question about emotional reveals, mm-hmm. I feel like it's just time will maybe get Harry out of this. Because, again, like from speaking with him pretty briefly, I feel like he was still acting as if he was in a boy band. He was on script.
Yes.
You know,
guarded.
He had talking points. He was nervous. He was guarded. He was, you know, flashes of self-awareness where, you know, as you mentioned, I asked him about masturbation and he said, you know, did I answer that question okay? Did we dance around that all right? Like, that's him admitting that he is still following rules.
Why didn't you ask him about morphine?
What do you know about morphine?
Yeah, is that like
Harry
a thing?
That,
first of all, is that a thing that people still do it? Like, is that a thing? Is that like the post Xan thing? It's like we're just going straight to morphine.
It's next.
Now? Yeah.
Morphine has
morphine
next.
Rap. All right, all you SoundCloud rappers. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Sign of the Times because I feel like the immediate comparisons that were coming out, especially overseas, were like, oh, well, it's a David Bowie song, da da da. And like, I mean, it's certainly a David Bowie ripoff. I mean, you know, you could say that for absolute certain. But then Sign of the Times kind of turned out to be an outlier on this record. But I think that most people still are like, that's the Harry Styles.
Well, it's interesting that that's what they decided to put out there first.
Mm-hmm. Is it a play to build up a mythology? Because like these other songs, which I think are better, are less
grand.
Yeah. And less poignant in a sort of like musical and referential
way. And I think it was messaging. It was a song that sounded Bowie-esque, mm-hmm. loosely, mm-hmm. released with the title of a Prince song on the anniversary of that Prince album. There's no way that was a
coincidental. Do you think the reason this album kept getting delayed is because they had to wait for both David Bowie and Prince to die in order to do this?
Like in a deal with the devil way or in like a marketing way?
Or in
way?
Like, I hope that they're not alive to comment on this way.
Can you imagine, the Prince reaction gifts? Just imagine.
I'm literally imagining them right now.
Just, oh my God.
It's striving for epicness. And I think that was, again, if we're talking about Harry searching for seriousness and authenticity, mm-hmm. then that was the quickest way to telegraph those things.
I think also they put it out ahead of his SNL appearance. And that was a good song to perform on SNL because it was very
agreed.
Cinematic and dramatic. And I thought that was a very successful performance.
Let's actually listen to the audio from that performance because I thought it was a good vocal performance too. Not to be all cowlish about it, but it was. We'll be right back. when I was writing the end of my piece, I kept thinking about what it meant as like a young pop star who really could make any kind of record to make a record that sounded at least in part like what we just heard. And I kept thinking of maybe this is perversely brave, maybe. Like this is, I'm going to go out on my terms and these very unfashionable terms. I'm wrong. I feel like in England, I feel like dudes like this probably have top 10 hits like every other month.
I asked him and I said, Harry, do your this is not in the interview. This is in a cutting room floor. But I said, do your friends make fun of you for having a dad taste in music? And he was like, my friends all have the same taste in music as me.
There
essentially.
You go.
So yeah, England, yeah. You know, who knew?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So maybe this is like a super jam and maybe I just reviewed it through an Americanist lens. Damn it. Damn it. So anyway, just keep that Americanist lens for a moment. He wants to be a global pop star. These are, you know, he's not doing Calvin Harris records. Like, he's doing records like this. Do you feel on some level, because I don't think it's that he thinks people are going to orient themselves around him. I don't think he thinks he's going to shift the culture. But do you think he thinks that if I fail, if I fizzle out, at least it's on my dad rock terms?
I think if he were to fizzle, he would be on a Calvin Harris song. I think Harry Styles is a business. I think they're in it for the long term. Mm-hmm. I think they knew that the Justin Bieber path would be there, which is like mercenary, you know, you're a weapon. Our man Bieber Valley just went back-to-back number ones on the Hot 100. Like, he could, and Harry is
Bugatti
mutable
Bieber.
Enough to fall into that if he ever needs the check or the number one hit. Like, I think you might as well swing hard first, and then you can always fall back.
Speaking of swinging hard first and then falling back, let's listen to a little Love on the Weekend by your boy, John Mayer. My God. Okay. So John Mayer put a record out a few weeks ago. I'm so glad, Joe, that you spoke to both John Mayer, and this is a big month for you.
Yeah, a big month for me and white guys with guitars. I mean,
so, you know, there are some common threads running through the new album by John Mayer, which is called The Search for Everything. It's like a Neil deGrasse Tyson book. Between the Harry Styles record and the John Mayer record, it is white guy guitar music. It is soft rock driven.
Mid-tempo boys. This is them.
Young mid-tempo here. And you know, we don't want to dwell on it, but they are allegedly ex-paramours of Taylor Swift.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on.
I feel
on
like
here.
I'm coining allegedly, not allegedly. Because I feel like we need that.
Yes.
And the culture needs that.
Yeah.
So allegedly, not allegedly. This John Mayer record, I mean, I just want to write off rip. Just be like, this is a bad record. It's a fun record to talk about, but it is a not fun record to listen to.
And this is the John Mayer paradox, right? Fun man to talk to, not necessarily as fun to listen to. And in his sort of waves of self-awareness and obliviousness, one thing he does get is that his personality and what he's known for as a celebrity is so out of line with the way his music sounds.
Yeah.
And we talked about it as every subject we talked about for probably half an hour.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know,
release
I think
the tapes.
In sitting down with John Mayer, I'm sort of like, you know, your music is for moms and for, you know, the dentist office
radio.
First
of all, moms are cool.
Moms are cool, but okay. Moms love John Mayer. You know, it's fine.
anticipating hate mail from moms.
Yeah, just, I just want to be clear. Moms are cool.
But, you know, then at the same time, he's just like throwing bombs, dart after dart in spoken word.
This is going to sound a little bit strange. I've also, two albums. You've had
good times with John Mayer, too.
I honestly, it was like one of the most fun interviews. And it was during that period where he was giving long, raunchy.
Just before the Playboy Rolling Stone interview. You caught him while he was warming up.
I did.
I think the lead of your story off the top of my head is, I should be having sex with more women, said John Mayer in slightly more colorful language. something like that.
That was the lead?
I think so, yeah.
Go back.
It was a fire.
We'll link to it in this podcast.
It was a fire story, yeah. Click the link. Link in bio.
We got all the good John Mayer content.
So I think, and like, okay, here is, this sounds like a terrible thing, like a mid-1970s rocker, like someone writing for Cream would say. But I think where you really hear John Mayer is in his guitar play.
All right. Podcast over. Check us out never again. Yes, that's a wrap.
Oh, man.
A hot take.
My God, it is hot. Yeah. It's like
the guitar solos on this album?
No, Search not for on everything? This album. No, they're bad. The ones on this album. There's everything about this record is like not
God,
pleasant.
God, John Mayer, why did you make such a bad record?
But here's the thing. Like I've seen John Mayer live a couple times. I assume everybody here has seen him.
Yeah.
He's very good. He's genuinely one of his generation's best guitar players. And 8 years ago, he was also very good at writing pop blues songs that also took advantage of the abilities that he had on the guitar. And the thing that I liked when I would see him in concert is he understood that there is a portion of the audience that's there for the love songs and a portion of the audience that's like kind of like guitar bros. And he really did an excellent job of weaving those two skill sets together. I was struck on this record how the lyrics are not there. The song construction is not there, and the guitar playing is not there. And Karen, you earlier said, like, how baffling for a guy who clearly is so bright, clearly is so engaging and incisive to make a record that is, like, quite literally like a 500-count sheet of copier paper.
It is. I think Joe just put it really well before. It's like his music and his personality so don't match. And I was saying to you, like, I would listen to our interview as an album if I could.
Triple album, quadruple album.
Yeah.
Check out my 63-page transcript.
But it's the sound of that interview would be a compelling album.
Totally
it's
agree.
Not the sound of the man who made that record.
You know, but this is the thing. Like, when John Mayer was really at his TMZ peak, like, those were great. Like, those were his mixtapes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, those
Drought 3,
yeah,
John Mayer.
Those street corner interviews. They were fire.
So,
they were fire. They gave you reason to watch TMZ every single day.
Well, did you ask him? I mean, like,
well,
you know, he's playing with the dead.
Let me give you the John Mayer view of this. He thinks these are the songs. He thinks that these are hits. He, you know, he compared it to a lot of things. He said...
Did he compare it to the Harry Styles record? A record that actually has hits?
He said, you know, he said he was basically thinking about George Clooney, that he wanted to be the guy who could make some indie films, and that's what he's calling Born and Raised, and the other one that he put out, Paradise Valley, in between, and that this was him going back to blockbusters. And I said, so is it Ocean's 11 or is it Ocean's 12?
Ooh.
And he was like, it's Ocean's 11. You're the critic, you know. You. I'll leave that to you. But I'm just saying what he said.
It's 15. let's listen to like one of the okay songs on this record, which is "Still Feel Like Your Man."
The prettiest girl in the room, she wants me. I know because she told me so. Says come over, I'd like to get to know you, but I just don't think I can. Cause I still feel like your man. Still feel like your man. Still feel like your man. Still feel like your man.
John's doing the panda dance now. Now that we're back. The choreographed dance.
So, Still Feel Like Your Man, you were on the video shoot.
I was.
Let's talk about that. That was a lot of money spent for, from what I can tell, is discernibly no reason.
You know, I'll give you the John Mayer version of events.
I hope he's paying you for this.
Famous last sentence.
I'm just a reporter. I don't have opinions.
Yep.
All right, Spicer.
Just here to convey my boss's opinion.
Sarah Huccarelli Sanders.
John Mayer said, you know, he thought this was a hit and he wanted to give it the best chance to succeed that he could. And he thought that meant making a flashy video, playful. You know, it takes place in what he called a disco dojo.
That's the thing. That's
there's
real.
A geisha, you know, there's panda bears, some bamboo. I think, you know, he was trying to have fun with it. Whether it was successful or not, I don't know. We discussed whether for a guy who was so concerned about having previously offended people in his past interviews, whether he thought that this would set him up to be the target of criticisms about cultural appropriation. He said he felt like they were on the right side of that line.
I think people have to see a video in order to be mad about it.
Right. So when he specifically asked me and he said, you know, do you think people are going to come for me over this? Because I was pushing him pretty hard on it. And I said, you know, I think they're going to try. And maybe if it doesn't hit hard, it's because not that many people were into it, which, you know, is a little raw, but, you know, we were having a real conversation. I enjoyed talking to this man.
Yeah,
but I will say, I think the reaction to this video is almost wholly dependent on the fact that it came out in the wake of Kendall Jenner's Pepsi commercial.
Yes.
Which was sucking up all of the internet air on either side. So we didn't have the conversation about cultural appropriation that we might have should this video have landed in a dead week, which, you know, in the news these days, we don't have dead weeks, but, but imagine.
So in a way, he was just lucky to be unnoticed.
Also, is this right? This song is not hitting, like, not to be all like reductive about it, but it's not maybe on adult contemporary radio. In,
yeah,
like, Topeka,
I think, you know,
it's hitting,
he still makes
shouts
waves.
Shouts to everybody in Topeka. I guess if you are listening to adult contemporary radio in Topeka and you're a podcast listener, will you email us and tell us how often John Mayer's being rammed down your gullets on radio?
Yeah, I think he makes like waves on the rock charts. You know, that's a thing that exists, and he does that. And
I think he just make a blues album, just be number one in the blues charts.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many things he could do. We could think of 10 things he could do that would be more successful than
but
this
I think
album.
This is where it comes back to Harry Styles, right? Because John Mayer said he wanted this to be a blockbuster. He wanted this album to be a hit. And I asked him, I said, you know, is this the kind of music that can still do that? And I think Harry, it maybe has the best chance to succeed doing something like that because he's...
But not premised on the music, premised upon his pre-existing fame, his pre-existing condition, which is
fame.
Celebrity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in a weird way, this is where Ed Sheeran, I think, comes back up again, because I think Ed Sheeran is maybe the closest example of someone who's doing this in the mainstream. And on a slightly junior level, you look at what Shawn Mendes is doing, and Shawn Mendes is doing a version of this at a lower level.
And John Mayer and I talked about that as well, that they were sort of the guys who came in his wake. You know, I've interviewed Shawn Mendes, and he is obsessed with John Mayer.
Sure.
He, you know, he said Continuum changed his life. You know, that's his number one guy. But what Ed Sheeran is in the same mold, I think, like, but what both of them do is sort of weave in more contemporary influences and collaborators, and that's how you get a Shape of You, for instance.
Do you feel that John Mayer is going to look at what Harry Styles has done with, like, some degree of envy? Not just because I believe the Harry Styles record is probably going to be more successful, but in a way, it nails an aesthetic that I think John Mayer knows he's capable of, but for whatever reason is backed off of.
He also communicates kind of like a swaggering, swashbuckling persona in the music that John Mayer is probably living more authentically and not communicating in his music.
Or if you listen, I will say this, a consistent theme on the John Mayer record that I felt like I kept coming back to was this sadness. And Joe, he talked about this with you a little bit in the interview. Harry Styles' sadness has to do with, I'm extremely famous, but I'm extremely empty. But it's all sort of happening in this very fast way. John Mayer's sadness on this album feels more existential. It's the 10-year version of that. It's the 15-year version of that.
Well, I think if you're asking if John Mayer is jealous of Harry Styles, I think maybe he's jealous that Harry Styles is 23. John Mayer is on the edge of 40 now, and, you know, he was very plain about being like, I want a partner. I want a life partner. I want a child. I'm ready to settle down. And that's, I think, a completely different thing than what Harry is going through.
So as we go out, I think we should acknowledge that John Mayer certainly does have children. So let's listen to Shawn Mendes, Mercy.
A touching conclusion.
Consuming all the air inside my lungs, ripping all the skin from off my bones. I'm prepared to sacrifice my life. I would gladly do its lies. Oh, please have mercy on me. Take it easy on my heart, even though you don't mean to hurt.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thank you to my guests, Karen Gans and Joe Coscarelli. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Honestly, if you're listening to adult contemporary radio somewhere in a city that's not New York or Los Angeles, email us at podcast@nytimes.com and tell us what's playing. We'd love to know. You can subscribe to the podcast, and you definitely should do that. That is at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer is Pedro Rosado. We'll be back next week.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.